In this session, we're doing Obadiah, but I'm going to use the Obadiah Old Testament survey slides because there's an introduction here that I want you to see to the prophets. So I'm shifting on over from the Old Testament preaching to the Old Testament survey, okay? And it says Obadiah, but I'm going to jump past Obadiah. So you have a little bit of understanding, just an introduction, quick introduction. So I'm going to jump to slide 13 on the Obadiah, all right? One of the perplexing things that we're going to experience as we move on into the prophets now is the fact that the prophets seem to jump back and forth in time periods. And if you don't understand this or accept it, you'll just be really frustrated going through reading through the prophets, okay? So this is one of my first things to say. Sometimes the prophet is referring to things happening in his own time, okay? Other times the prophet is looking forward to exile. So this would be like a near fulfillment or a near return. And sometimes is looking forward to Christ's first coming. And then sometimes that just sort of mixes into Christ's second coming. And you'll see it in the same sentence. And then he'll even go beyond that. So he's to the new heavens and the new earth. Isaiah, for example, he does all five of these. And so you have to discern when Isaiah or any of the prophets is talking about his own time, a near fulfillment, and then even when you get to far fulfillment, there's three different stages of far fulfillment. Christ coming to suffer would be, let's say, Isaiah 53. Christ coming to reign would be, you know, Isaiah 6 or Isaiah 11, I guess. And then new heavens and a new earth. Even the way Isaiah uses the term in Isaiah 65 and 66 is really not the same way that John uses the term in Revelation 21, 22. So this is just a little warning or something to keep in mind. I like what Salem Kerbin says in his Church on Revelation here to show how this is kind of how this unfolds. The other thing that we will encounter as we go through the prophets is the one to whom the prophets ministered is going to vary as we go through the various prophets. Weren't a whole lot of them to Israel, but Hosea and Amos did minister in the northern kingdom. We will see sometimes they're ministering outside or they're dealing with things outside Israel and Judah themselves, like Jonah, for example, and Nahum, who are ministering or prophesying in relationship to Assyria. We will see that Edom is the point, is the referent in the book of Obadiah. And then Babylon and Persia, we've got Ezekiel and Daniel there as well. So knowing whom these in the time and who these each of these prophets is actually talking to, I think is quite important to be able to understand the message. And then Judah, of course, has the most prophets. Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi will finish it all off, but we've got all the others. Habakkuk, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Joel, Micah, Zephaniah, and Lamentations. I put it in parentheses because that's not the name of a prophet. It's not Mr. Lamentations, you know. And this can be really, wow, this can be kind of overcoming too much. So I like page 445. So I want to invite you to turn to page 45 in your notes because this is how we're going to look at the books. We're going to look at them in a chronological order. We don't have any writing prophets at the time of Saul, David, and Solomon. All right? So they're all going to come after that. We do have prophets. We have Nathan. We have Gad speaking to these guys, etc. But if you think of SOS, you know that SOS means warning, right?
Yes.
What is it? What is SOS abbreviate?
Save our souls.
Save our souls. Oh, yeah, yeah. Save our souls. The O, the D kind of looks like an O if you're in the back row, right? So that's what I put the O in parentheses, you know, save our souls. But that's what they're saying. Oh, Lord, save our souls because the kingdom is about to divide. So we don't have any prophets in the United Kingdom. They come after the kingdom actually divides. And they start around 800 or so in the pre-exile. So as I noted our first day of class, we have pre-exilic prophets, all right? That's the majority of them, actually, who are writing before the exile. But they're not all writing to the same place. As I just noted, Israel has two prophets focused on the northern kingdom. Hosea and Amos. Now, how are you going to remember Hosea and Amos? Well, the northern kingdom was just, you know, thumbing up their you know, whatever, to know, you know, their nose to God and just, we don't really believe what you're saying. We're going to continue in our idolatry. So if you just remember, ha, you'll remember Hosea and Amos, all right? So just remember, ha, those guys, yeah, that's Hosea. That's what Hosea and Amos were saying the northern kingdom was doing. Would God be caring? Would God be even addressing things related to the others, like Assyria? If they were saying, ha, the people of Assyria were saying, nah. So if you just remember it, Joe, nah, and nah, hum. The two prophets that are N-A-H in their names is nah. Assyria was saying nah to God until Jonah went to them, and then they all said, whoa, yeah. You know, we'll talk about Jonah later on. And Nahum, written 100 years later to Assyria, they really had gone back to their sinful ways, and they were still saying nah to God. So God raised up two prophets whose names were nah to relate to Assyria, okay? Edom, do you remember the Edom's ancestor, where they came from? It was the person of Esau, yeah. And Esau was relationship to Jacob, brothers, right? So the messianic line came through Jacob. Esau was the brother of Jacob, but even though they were related to Israel, they actually, we see in Obadiah, they actually rejoice that the enemy comes in and just, you know, has God's judgment on Jerusalem, and they end up helping the enemy to capture their brother. God says, that's really bad. Oh, bad. So God raised up a prophet named Oh, bad. Oh, bad. Obadiah. Oh, Obadiah. I mean, it's one thing to cut off people at the crossroads you don't even know, but to do that to your relatives, this was really bad of the people of Edom. And so Obadiah talks about God's judgment against them. I'm going to skip the major part of pre-exile. Move on into exile right now. When the people go away from the land, God brings two prophets who have the ending of their name is IE, in exile. Ezekiel. I could say IEL as well, you know. But in exile, prophets Ezekiel and Daniel, these two did not prophesy in Israel or Judah. They're the only ones that are actually prophesying out of the land. Even Jonah was prophesying in the northern kingdom, but he was talking about, you know, Assyria. So Jews in exile would be, well, the guys who have IE in their name. Then there's the post-exilic prophets, and we'll end the course talking about these Jews in Jerusalem, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. I haven't thought of a good memory device for that one except Hazama. Ha would be Haggai. Zah Zechariah, and Malachi. So if you just remember Hazama, maybe you'll remember that. If you can think of a better one, let me know. Did you think of one?
Haze.
Oh, well, it is haze there. Haze, yeah. Haze. I guess if you... There's a lot of haze outside right now. It's a little better. I guess if you're complaining to your ma about the haze, haze, ma, you know? Yeah, maybe that's better, yeah. You just have to capitalize a Z, and then you remember that these are actually three prophets. Here's the hard one. The majority of the prophets that God sent were people to the covenant nation of Judah, where the Davidic kingdom was continued on, where God was being faithful to provide a descendant of David on the throne there in Jerusalem. And so there in Judah, the Lord sent Habakkuk, Isaiah, J.J., Jeremiah, Joel, and then MZL, Micah, Zephaniah, and Lamentations. Most of those you'll be able to remember. There's a couple of guys with H. Habakkuk is here. You have to remember Haggai's at the end. Maybe that's not good, but Hag, you know, just older, you know, just kind of at the end. Maybe, no. Habakkuk, Isaiah, let's see, he's the only one with an I. J.J., except you realize that Jonah's to Assyria, so Jeremiah, Joel would be here. You could get Micah mixed up with Malachi, but we all know Malachi was last, right? So that you're not going to do that. And then Zephaniah, you could get mixed up with Zechariah. The way I remember this is that Zechariah in the post-exilic era, he's closest to the Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist, in the New Testament. So you put the two Zecharias together chronologically. You do what it takes for you to remember them, okay? And then Lamentations. By the time we get here, you're probably crying. But if you just remember H-I-J-J-M-Z-L, then that'll be really helpful. But I know you're saying, yeah, but how do I remember H-I-J-J-M-Z-L? Sometimes it's helpful, our music students will tell us this, that to make a little song about it. So let's sing a little song about this, okay? That'll help us remember that. Let's sing together now. H-I-J-J-M-Z-L, H-I-J-J-M-Z-L. Sing with me. H-I-J-J-M-Z-L. Again, H-I-J-J-M-Z-L, H-I-J-J-M-Z-L. Big finish now. H-I-J-J-M-Z-L. Da-da-da-dun. Done. Now, you're never going to forget H-I-J-J-M-Z-L because every time I say, who is there in Judah? You're going to go, oh, H-I-J-J-M-Z-L, you know. And so I bet you could, I'm going to put the black screen on. I bet you could turn the page and I bet you could fill this in yourself, right? You've got that right there in your notes. Page 445 gives you the answers, but don't look at it. Go to the next page and fill in the chart, 446. Looks like this, okay? See if you can do it. So you're going to put on this chart, without looking at page 445, you're going to put the three major eras at the top, and then you'll put the 17 prophets in their correct space. So how are you going to remember the ones, Israel? How are you going to remember the ones to... Assyria. Were these guys good that Edom was preaching to? Let's see. I don't think so. Who are the Jews in exile? In exile. See if you can write these in yourself without me telling you. Jews in Jerusalem at the end of the end of the Old Testament era. Things were still a bit hazy at that time. Oh, oops. Gave you the hint, you know. And then I'm sure you've got the song for Judah, right? So write them in on your own. See if you can get all 17 prophets plus the three time periods at the top. That'll be 20 little spaces there for 446. See if you can do it on your own. I'll give you a minute to do that. And if you're doing it at home, listening to this, do it also. This is how you'll be able to learn it. Well, good. Some of you are finished. It's kind of nice to have some of these digital devices you can write on, huh? Very good. I don't have a song for the kings, but I have a song for all the key words. It's in the back of your notes of volume one. But I do have memory devices for the kings. J.N. Bezo for the northern kings. J.N. Bezo. Jeroboam, Nadab, that's J and N, Bezo, Baasha, then Eud, Baasha, Ella, yeah, E-L-A-H, Ella, Zimri, Omri, J and Bezo, and then Aj, A-A-J-J, Ahab, Athaliah, Jehoram, Jehoziah. I can't remember that one, but anyway. Good. Okay, I'm going to put it up here and see how you did. So if you missed one of them, this is just do an overview here for these. Okay, we need to place the prophetic books. Okay, those are just basically three different things to do in relationship to an introduction to the prophets. But let's move on into Obadiah. We'll spend a few minutes in Obadiah and then take a break. Have you noticed the middle letter to the word pride? I. Pride is when I am most important. When I is at the center of my life. Just as the letter I is at the center of the word pride, right? Now, how does God respond to pride? This was the problem of the people of Edom, where God said, oh, so bad. What was so bad about these people of Edom? Ultimately, pride. As some have said that all sin actually goes back to pride. That's an interesting thought. I think there may be some truth to that. All sin is essentially us being concerned about ourselves rather than the things of God and serving other people. And so how does God respond to pride? God judges the proud. God is not interested in there being any rivals to his throne, not because he's proud, but because he knows what's best for us. And so the book of Obadiah says God judges pride. He judges the proud. The people of Edom were exceedingly proud. And then not only that, God blesses the humble. Just to sum up the book pretty quickly, it's only 21 verses in the last 7 verses, verses 15 to 21, shows how God will bless the humble in the future with the nation of Israel, and how God does the same today. So if you want the main idea of Obadiah, it's essentially this. God humbles the proud, but exalts the humble. If you want God to exalt you, humble yourself. If you want God to humble you, exalt yourself. Maybe I could say it this way. Every one of us is going to be humble. Every one of us. But God gives you the choice. Either you humble yourself or God humbles you. Those are your two choices. And let me give you a little word of wisdom. You humbling yourself is a lot better than God humbling you. Because sometimes he has to just be very, very severe with us to humble us. But in any case, we're all going to end up humble. But at this particular time when Obadiah was written, they had not humbled themselves, right? And so the Lord raised up Obadiah to be his messenger to do that very thing. All right, so I'm going to call the book, I'm going to jump to slide 50, Be Humble. Why? Why should we be humble? We all hate pride. We struggle with it, though. You know what we do? We hate pride in other people. We don't really hate pride in ourselves, though, do we? We all struggle with pride. We see it when other people are proud, but we don't often see it when we are proud, you know? So why do you think we all struggle with pride? I don't know how you would answer that. And I don't know if I know the answer. But this book tells us how God responds to it. And so what he does is he says that this is the vision of Obadiah. Actually, Obadiah is one of the 12. Okay, this is what they're called in the Hebrew canon, the 12 smallest of the prophets, with the exception of Zechariah, is actually a little bit longer. They were all put in one scroll in antiquity because they're so short. Obadiah, I mean, you could fit Obadiah on a little postcard. Only 21 verses, you know. And so they would write all 12 of those prophets on one scroll. And then they'd have a huge scroll for Isaiah, a huge scroll for Jeremiah, etc. And these men had the courage to confront culture. And so I initially did a preaching series on the minor prophets because these were major messages from minor prophets. And I find that of all the sections of the Bible, this is the part of the Bible that we have studied the least. Do I see some nods from you? That's what I felt like with my people in my church. And I said, boy, my people just don't know. They just don't know the prophets very well, the minor prophets. And then I realized, oh, the reason they don't know the minor prophets is I haven't preached to them on the minor prophets. So maybe I should take some responsibility here as pastor. So I preached 12 sermons on the minor prophets, and that actually started off what ended up becoming my series called The Bible Book by Book, where I'm actually preaching one sermon on every book of the Bible. Last Sunday, I finished sermon 58. So I have 8 more to go in the New Testament, and then I'll have one sermon that covers every book of the Bible. This may not look very strange to you when you get to the very first verse of the book. It just says the vision of Obadiah. That's it. And then there's white space after it. I kind of go, well, Lord, why, how come there's white space after it? You're supposed to say, during the reign of, and give us the king's time there, but it doesn't. There's no king. There's no time period listed there. There's one other book that's like that. Do you know what it is? We haven't gotten there yet. It's not Hosea. Hosea actually does give the time, the king there. It's the book of Joel. So there's two of these that are very difficult to know when to date. There have been like four different dates proposed. The only indication of the date might be here is in verse 10. Because of the violence against your brother Jacob, verse 11, when you stood aloof while strangers carried off his wealth and foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, you were like one of them. And he even says, you shouldn't, verse 13, you shouldn't march through their gates of my people in the day of their disaster. Verse 14, you shouldn't wait at the crossroads to cut down their fugitives. So what time period was this when Jerusalem was invaded and the people of Edom actually aided the people who were invading Jerusalem? Obadiah was the servant of Ahab around 845 BC. He was said to be a godly man in the northern kingdom. So I take it that this is the Obadiah we're talking about, and this is the time when the Philistines and the Arabs invaded Jerusalem. But others will say, no, this should be 586. This is the destruction of Jerusalem. And maybe they're right, so I'm not going to be, you know, hard-nosed about the dating on it, but I want to teach you all the prophets in the dates, in the order in which I think they were covered. And I think Obadiah was probably the first, but I might be very much, very wrong on that. But it does address this question, how does God respond to pride? And you'll see on slide 61 the summary chart. So this is about Edom's destruction. And why? For opposing Judah. Edom should not have aided these enemies in their invasion of Jerusalem. And God said, because you have done that kind of injustice to your brother, God's going to judge you. You've heard of the golden rule? Do unto others as you would wish others to do to you, that Jesus said. I call this the iron rule. It's not golden. It's iron. God says, I will do to you as you have done to others. You guys have rejoiced over Jerusalem's misfortune. Other people are going to rejoice over your misfortune. God does judge fairly. And when we are intent on going against him, against his ways, there's a price to pay for that. So we will see a fair amount of judgment in the prophetic books. So the focus of verses 1 to 14 is the judgment on Edom. Proud Esau defeats defenseless Jacob. And then the latter part is blessing on Judah. Powerful Jacob defeats a humbled Esau. So the first half is relating to the past. The second half is relating to the future. So in these first 14 verses, he basically is saying God judges the proud. So we don't know exactly when it was written, but this is what it does say. This is what the sovereign Lord says about Edom. We've heard a message from the Lord. An envoy was sent to the nations to say, rise, let us go against her for battle. Oh, boy, okay, the Edomites are going to get judged. See, I will make you small among the nations. You'll be utterly despised, God says. See, these are the people who made themselves big. God says, I'm going to make you small because you make yourself big. In fact, he says, the pride of your heart has deceived you. You who live in the clefts of the rock, in your lofty dwelling, who say in your heart, who will bring me down to the ground? Now, we know that some of the Edomites lived in these rocks. They lived in these hills. You can go there today to to the city of Petra. And you'll see how they actually carved out of the side of the rock these buildings. They carved their houses. They lived up there in the heights. They had the high ground. It was incredibly difficult for people to actually invade them. And these descendants of Jacob became Israel, the nation of Israel. The descendants of Esau became the people of Edom. And so I think what this book is actually talking about is a twofold purpose: to delineate God's judgment on Edom, and then also to set forth the final triumph of right in the day of the Lord. I encourage you, if you go to Jordan, probably the best place to go in Jordan, National Geographic has a special on it. They've done it 3 times, actually. On Petra, where it's just, I mean, the terrain they lived in was absolutely incredible. You would wonder why anyone would want to live there, except that they were very well protected to live there. They even cut a, they didn't cut the seek. This was a natural fissure in the rock, a very narrow way to get on into Eden. Edom, or at least this city, is that oftentimes it would be just half the size of this classroom, narrow, just to get on through. Can you imagine trying to be the invading army, and you get your whole army in through just a couple meters like this? The Edomites were just above, the people of Petra above, they just threw rocks down on these people, shot arrows, you know, threw boiling oil, you know, whatever, you know. I mean, nobody could get on through this. And they even brought water into the city by this water course that they cut into the rock. So there would be as many as 10,000 people living right in there. And this was all buried for centuries until this was discovered in the late 1800s. And they dug all the way down. They actually found out where this city was. And it's given us a lot of insight, actually, into the book of Obadiah. Because you go through that seek all the way to the end and you get opens up to the treasury, which is just carved right out of the rock. And here's what it looks like above, looking down at a tour group. Fascinating. But I'll have to spare you all the details. I'm going to jump to slide 88. The trade route, north-south trade route went on the other side of the Dead Sea and went right through Petra. That was one of the key routes from Egypt to the Mesopotamia. And Petra was at that place where the caravans would go by, going from the southwest to the northeast. So it had that route, but it also was at the corner of the spice trade. It came from India to Europe. And so Petra was a key city that controlled the trade, going to Europe, going to Asia, going to from Africa, down from the Saudi area. And they lived up in the rocks, and the people ended up becoming very, very proud about all of that. And so God says, I'm going to jump to slide 111, though you soar like the eagle, you guys living way up in the rocks, you go up higher than that. Though you soar like the eagle and make your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord. You know? You could be really proud, living way, way up there, and think you're the best stuff. And he says, no, I'll bring you down. You like that? With the shirt off? Yeah, that's really good. And so he says, you think that you're really protected, but you're not so protected. All right? I'm going to jump again, 124, for those of you following along in PowerPoint. It's like 1 Peter 5. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Or 1 Peter 5, 6. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the right time, he may exalt you. That's how God responds to the proud. But God also blesses the humble. And here we find in the last few verses of the book, teaching on the day of the Lord. The day of the Lord is near for all nations. Oh, now he's broadened beyond Eden, hasn't he? As you have done, it will be done to you. That's what I call the iron rule. Your deeds will return upon your own head. Just as you swallowed up my people on my holy mountain, so you and the surrounding nations will swallow the punishment I pour out on you. Yes, all you nations will drink and stagger and disappear from history. You catch what he's saying here? He's now broadened this. He's not just talking about Edom. He's talking about all the nations. And this has been referred to as like reversal. Edom was over Israel, the first 14 verses, and now this is going to be Israel over Edom. And I think what we've got here is it's like climbing a mountain. You're climbing up a mountain, and it doesn't look like you really have any valleys there as you're going on up. But as we saw in terms of these various times that are depicted by the prophets, we've got Obadiah actually talking about this. You know, we see these valleys, but I think really what he's talking about is he's talking about looking to the future. And I believe that we're talking about our future from our own age. And I have this timeline on page 437 that I call a dispensational timeline that shows how looking to the future, you've got the return of the Lord coming in association with a great time of tribulation on the nation, on the world actually, and ending with the Lord actually coming to the earth and bringing in his earthly kingdom. So I see what he's talking about. He's saying there's going to be a time of great trouble that's going to be coming upon the world, and it's going to even include Israel. It's a day of trouble followed by a day of blessing. We'll talk about this more when we get to Zephaniah and Joel that has a lot more about this. But I think that's what he's talking about. Day of the Lord, in other words, a period in the future. The people of Israel will come back to reclaim their inheritance, verse 17, because Jerusalem is going to be a refuge for them. And he says the people of Jerusalem, or Israel, will be a raging fire, and Edom will be a field of dry stubble. The descendants of Joseph will be a flame roaring across the field, devouring everything. There will be no survivors in Edom. I, the Lord, have spoken. So he's saying the Edomites had the upper hand, but in the future, this is going to turn around, and Israel is actually going to have an upper hand. And so I'm saying that I think Obadiah is saying there is a future for national Israel. He's saying that they will have this kind of really a fulfillment, jumping to slide 159, that these borders of the land promised to Abraham that go from the Wadi of Egypt all the way to the Euphrates River, and God's going to do it. God's going to fulfill all his promises. And so we see the end of Obadiah say this: people from the Negev, there in the south, will occupy the mountains of Edom. They're going to expand over to the east. And the people from the foothills, that would be the foothills area, are going to possess the land of the Philistines. Well, that certainly hasn't happened right now. That land of the Philistines is the Gaza Strip. They'll occupy the fields of Ephraim and Samaria. And Benjamin is going to possess Gilead on the other side of the Jordan River and way up to the north. This company of Israelite exiles who are in Canaan will possess the land as far as Zarephath, way up in the north. The exiles from Jerusalem who are in Sepharad will possess the towns of the Negev. Where in the world is Sepharad? Nobody really knows. Some say Spain, Media, Libya. Nobody really knows. But anyway, it says that these people are going to actually come to the Negev. And the final verse, deliverers will go up on Mount Zion to govern the mountains of Esau, and the kingdom will be the Lord's. And so what we have is a promise here that because of Edom's judgment of their injustice toward Judah, God's going to reverse it. And Israel, or Judah, is actually going to have a victory over the people of Edom. We will talk about this over and over and over in the prophets, so I'm not going to belabor it right now. Just to remind you and to remind myself of what the Lord says here about pride and humility. Ken Blanchard said, slide 171, humility doesn't mean you think less of yourself. It means you think of yourself less. Humility is not the same as self-abasement or just, you know, you're worth nothing, that kind of idea. It has more the idea of you do think of other people. And the book of Obadiah leaves us with this question. What area of your life do you need to curb pride? Every one of us needs to curb pride, just in different areas. What area is it for you? As I said earlier, I would just encourage you to humble yourself rather than God humbling you, because you'll be a whole lot better off if you do that yourself.